Good morning. Today is Friday, June the 8th. Joining us this morning, Humble Bay Fire Chief Bill Rails. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Are we having fun yet?
Oh, always.
Okay, I'll spot you on that one for a moment or two. Oh, boy. So we made it through the three-day.
We did.
No major fires going on. That's good. We got graduation, and then we really come into fire season.
It's going to be that time. Absolutely.
What is there at this point that you would like to have with the current fiscal year? So you got, what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks left, whatever it is, that you'd like to have wrapped up before the end of the month?
Oh, geez, lots of things. Primarily, you know, at the end of the year, we typically see a rush on some new equipment purchases, basically with a little bit of people that have been responsible with their categorical responsibilities. You know, they tend to hoard their money over the year, and if there's some things to be bought, this is now the time of year to do that because they want to use up a little bit of money in the budget, obviously. Other things, basically,
like hoses and
hose and power equipment and personal protective equipment, stuff that takes a lot of wear and tear, obviously. You know, the other big things that really wrap up for us this time of year is training. You know, you mentioned that, you know, coming into the summer months and everything, when the wildland fire season starts to spin up, you know, there's a host of training that we have to get done for that, make sure our guys are ready to go, and not only locally, but also helping the state out as well.
Certification stuff, Bill, or is it just skill refreshment?
Both. You know, we always have personnel that are looking to expand their training and be able to do new and exciting things out there to help out the state and here locally. But also, we have to go through every year, and it's not something, you know, obviously we do year-round because when it starts raining around here, the vegetation fires slack off. We don't see them. So our guys basically have to get back into the mode of doing the working out in the wildland environment. So it's a lot of refresher training as well.
You mean compass skills?
That's a big one. Yeah. Absolutely.
There is no road there, man. Nealon fire truck.
Yeah.
Rolled over. A water truck? I don't know what it was.
Their water tender.
Okay, I guess county probably has some culpability in it because it was parked on the side of the road and the road kind of gave way on it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was on a county road or a private driveway.
Oh, was it a driveway?
Yeah, it might have been a driveway because it was a pretty rural fire out there.
Something like that happens. You know, my immediate thought was sad. And then I thought vulnerable. Just bang, bang.
Absolutely.
Is there anything going on? Are they doing anything? Is there fundraising? Is there anything that, you know, folks can help out on? Do they already have another truck? I mean, what is that Measure Z money? What do you think is swirling? I know you guys all talk to one another. What's going on with that?
Yeah, first and foremost, that was a close call. That, you know, that's the nightmare call that anybody in the fire service, especially a fire chief, ever gets. That not only did, you know, you have equipment roll down the hill, but the potential for injury or even death there. So obviously fortunate that, you know, it was only minor injuries in that. As far as that goes, for the short term, you know, they're going to have to rely, if they have, you know, obviously Nealon's a pretty rural jurisdiction. If they have a fire where they need a water tender, they're going to have to lean heavily on their neighbors, from us, from Arcata, from Blue Lake, for our water tenders and everything.
That's for me to get to the tower by the school, that's a 45-minute drive from the studios. If it's one of your rigs, okay, you may go a little bit quicker until you hit, yeah, three corners, and then after that, we're all going the same speed.
Absolutely.
That's a long, long interim.
It is. It is. And, you know, having driven our water tender, our 2,000-gallon water tender up that hill before, you almost get to the point where you want to turn off the lights and the siren because you're not going to get anybody out of the way.
Why bother?
Exactly.
Yeah. There's nobody to get out of the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. So as far as their replacement plan goes, I haven't heard of any fundraising or anything yet, but I know that that's got to be something that I'm sure they're exploring the whether it's through Measure Z funding or through fundraisers and whatnot. I know they don't have another one. Their water tender was old to begin with, and then to lose what they had is pretty devastating for them. So hopefully when we hear more information, we can get it out to the media outlets basically to try to help our brothers and sisters up on the hill get their stuff out there. So
yeah, where do those things go for?
Oh, geez. I know back in 1996 when our department bought a water tender, at that time it was about $200,000. So figure, you know, with the way things are now, I would be shocked if you could get one for $300,000 to $400,000. They're pretty darn expensive.
Is there a used market for that?
There is a used market out there, and then that honestly would be the route that you would probably see a smaller department go, just because you can get good quality equipment out there that maybe another department lightly used or gently used, and be able to get something along that way. Because again, it's pretty cost prohibitive to buy something brand new.
So if that's what the new price was, and let's say it was a joint fundraising effort, Humble Bay and Neyland at the same time. You guys get the new one, the one that you have, would that still be, obviously it's better than what they have now, but would right. it be something that they would be able to get life, would it be viable to do that kind of partnering?
I think so. We're, not just with Neyland, but any other fire department in the area. We want to help, everybody out there, because, we're the biggest career department in the area. But we recognize that when we have a big fire in Eureka, the people that are coming to back us up and help us out on our fires are the small volunteer departments. And whatever we can do to help them out and basically make them a viable resource so they can not only effectively help the other community, they're going to help ours as well. So anything we can do to partner with them in something like that, we'd be happy to.
I'll be sure to make a note and have them, reach out to all of us. I mean, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've had enough local experiences with the fire in Brookings this past year and years before that also, that while some folks in Eureka may think, not us.
Yeah.
Don't be breathing that easy.
Yeah, nobody.
It could be all of us,
especially in a small community like ours. Nobody really stands alone, because if
what comes roaring down the mountain, here yep. we are. Now it's our little Arcata Road. It's getting everybody.
Absolutely. And not only that, but the importance of all of us training together and being familiar with each other's equipment and understanding, what our limitations are and what their limitations are. We need to be ahead of the curve and make sure we're prepared before it gets to a point where we're thrown together to, on the fire line together.
Yeah, yeah. So many levels, man. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Interim Fire Chief Bill Reynolds from Humboldt Bay Fire. Bill, this time of the year, again, we've got the budget coming through, but we've also got this little challenge called the upcoming budget. Now, Greg Sparks, the city manager, was in last Friday and said moderately healthy. Okay. County folks have kind of been echoing the same sentiments. Okay. How's Humboldt Bay Fire?
We're okay. Right now, there's obviously, we have a lot of needs as far as personnel goes. Right now we're working on hiring 3 new firefighters to get ourselves back up to full staff. And we're doing okay, though, is the best way to put it. I wouldn't say that we're flush by any means, but there's always going to be challenges. We have unexpected expenses that pop up. We have other things like over the last year we had quite a few injuries on the job, and that which resulted in some more overtime that we obviously had to compensate for. But we're doing okay. But again, we always, in the future, it's the unknowns that make you nervous, because it's, again, those things that pop up. We talked a little bit ago about the Neyland water tender accident. Right now, if we were to have an accident like that, we have to ask questions like, how would we try to replace something? What would we need to do? Would we, as a career department, need to look at buying used piece of apparatus to be able to, get ourselves back in service?
Do you have redundancies?
We do. We basically, in regards to apparatus, we do have reserve apparatus there that if one goes to the shop or needs to be fixed, we can put an older piece, a reserve piece of apparatus into service and everything. And
where do they live?
In the stations. If you go most of our fire stations, you'll see a couple different fire engines sitting there. Typically, one of those is the lead piece of apparatus that'll basically respond to the majority of the calls. Typically, the newer stuff with the most modern equipment on it. But then you'll see older apparatus in the station right next to it, and that's not staffed. And it's still equipped to be able to go. So not only if we have apparatus that's broken or needs to go to the shop to get fixed, we can also, if we have a large fire, off-duty personnel can come in and staff that to be able to keep our staffing up coverage here in Eureka. So
you don't want to dip into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And shift everything across, yeah, because there's still the vulnerability with that.
Yes.
All the infrastructure, other than the rolling stock, so to speak, pretty much okay? Is that normal cycling, or do you guys have additional wear and tear that a lot of us might not think would occur?
As far as the infrastructure goes, there is wear and tear that people don't necessarily see. You know, for one example, something we've dealt with recently is our radio system. Obviously, it's our lifeline when we're on a fire to be able to talk to each other and talk to dispatch and get the resources we need. But we've had some maintenance that's been deferred over the past several years that we're just now getting able to take care of. Obviously, there's a price tag attached with that. But, you know, but just with the wet climate that we live in, with the salty air from the sea and whatnot, basically there's wear and tear that we don't see until we start seeing little failures in the system, and that basically is something that, again, it's not always on the front of your mind, and you don't really notice you're having a problem until you start having a problem. So trying to get ahead of some of that preventative maintenance to keep us from getting to that point, obviously, is a challenge.
Yeah. I had to bring up the old radio thing, huh? Yeah. It's kind of sexy, you know, the breathing stuff or the moon suits and all that kind of stuff. If they're used, they get fatigued. If they're not used, do they get fatigued?
Yes. If they're not initially used on a structure fire or one of the things we go on, like in regard to our turnout or our breathing apparatus, our personnel are very aggressive in training, and they go out and basically, and they're using them in training. We have our burn box down at Hilfiker they use it on. So they take fatigue that way. But one way they do take fatigue that not a lot of people are aware of is exposure to direct sunlight. You know, obviously, back in the day, I remember some when I was still a volunteer firefighter, people were really proud of what they were doing as a volunteer. They would hang their turnout coat up in their window and basically trying to show everybody they were a firefighter. But the problem is the sun was beating down on that and just basically would basically break down the material that's there to protect us. And over time, it basically would fatigue to the point where it was out of service. And we obviously preach better, methods of taking care of their gear. We keep it out of direct sunlight and everything. But that's one of those things that you do see that does break down over time, even without heavy use.
Well, you see that, with window displays in furniture stores and clothing stores.
Right.
The sun fade and wear and tear. After 3 or 4 months, it starts to discolor.
Right.
I would imagine, even if it was rubber, it starts
kind
to
of break
do the
down.
Same process also, or oxidation or whatever it might happen to be.
Right.
So do you put those in closets?
We have
humidity controlled?
Nothing humidity controlled. We have lockers at our stations basically that aren't directly in the sunlight and everything that they hang in. And it also, when they use them and they basically go to a fire and they get wet or they get smoke on them, we do have laundering facilities at the fire station to be able to wash them, get all the toxins and everything out.
Yeah, but it's got to be something industry specific, huh?
It is. It's very, very heavy duty, very industrial. It's actually, we don't call it a washing machine. It's called a quote unquote extractor because it helps pull all of the junk that we get into our clothing on the fire out of it.
Now, do you use the same process? Like if there's a meth lab or an explosion or there's chemicals in the air, not fire. I know it's the same, chemical, but never mind. Chemicals from labs and things like that, will that same process be used to try to sterilize the air?
A little bit different. If it's something like that that's beyond the normal products of combustion we deal with in a fire.
Chlorine in the air or some of the ugly stuff.
A lot of times for something like that, we would end up having to basically with proper respiratory protection, everything, have to bag that stuff up and send it someplace special to be cleaned, if we get it back at all, because at that point we may be looking at replacement, hopefully being able to build to the incident to be able to replace that stuff. Fortunately, we don't have to do it that often, but if it's something that nasty, we don't have the capability at the fire station to take care of it. The day-to-day stuff we can, but something like that would be pretty exceptional.
Well, probably in the old days, you know, with the mills running the chlorine and some of that kind of stuff, it might have been more, the potential might have been more out there rather than, you know, what we have now.
Absolutely. And the other thing to think about too, back in the older days when my father was a firefighter, firefighters would go to a fire call, they would get back to the station, they would fold their boots down next to their bed and go to sleep. And you could, you know, you could, basically those are off-gassing during the night. You're breathing the fumes that are coming off of them. It wasn't because they were, you know, doing anything wrong. They just didn't know any better. And there's been cases of firefighters being, you know, essentially poisoned by their turnout sitting next to their bed. Which is why now we, you know, we wash our turnouts after every incident we go on that they get exposed to things like that, and our turnout gear never comes into our living quarters at all. They basically, you know, keep it on the apparatus bay and away from where we sleep.
It's 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Interim Fire Chief Bill Reynolds. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, Redec, Lolita Cheese, and American Ag Credit. Just had a niche. Bill, there's been discussion over the years about placement of fire stations. You know, we got this goofy one out here by the cemetery, which was dandy at a time, but it was, you know, it was functional before there was a Myrtle and West. You know, you look at the old pictures and there, you know, there was a road that doesn't exist now that was going through what is now part of Bray Center, a straight shot. Neighborhoods change. You've got the big plot of land that's on Henderson, about a block and a half west of the current station. And it's been talked about as a great spot because you access it from one side and the other. You don't have to put things in reverse and drive through, and it would be designed to handle today instead of, what, 40 or 50 years ago.
Right.
Any progress on that at all?
Not currently. Right now, we're operating out of our five stations, and you know, and the one at Myrtle and West is, you know, to be very honest, is not the most ideally located one. You know, but the nice thing about that station is if we, you know, and that's the station we run our two-person squad out of. You know, the biggest advantage to that one is its proximity to Old Town and the commercial district downtown. And if we're running our ladder truck out of the fire station at 6th and C, the ladder truck has a different work set of duties it needs to do when it gets on scene of a fire. You know, obviously going to the roof to ventilate, doing rescue. So a lot of times, if we can get back to having a fire engine at that station at Station 4 at Myrtle and West, that's going to be the first water that gets to the fire. So that's the biggest value it is there. As far as new stations go, obviously there's a whole process involved. If we're looking at basically wanting to either relocate or open a new station, we obviously need to seek the best, you know, best location for it. And the way we're going to do that is by looking at things like you mentioned, like, you know, the accessibility of the station, response times, you know, what the call volume might be in a certain area versus another one. So there's a lot that we would have to look into before we do that. It's not something we can just, you know, because a lot of people, you know, over the years, nothing here recently, but over the years, people have said, I've got this great piece of land I would love to sell to the fire department because I think that would be a great fire station here. And while the generosity is appreciated, we really want to make sure that this is the actual best location, because if we put a fire station in that location, that's going to be a multi-decade commitment to basically make sure we have something there.
Well, Cutton is the other one. It's the obvious challenge also, and it's tough to predict development changes. But Cutton's got a lot of land. Okay, you really don't have anything in the neighborhood. Hubbard, just outside of Eureka, is not really designed for servicing out there. Okay, and it, I suppose for a lot of us, when we look at it, it's the next level. It's not the immediate. It's the Hubbard station servicing Three Corners and Neyland, Elder Arcata Road, Mitchell Heights. Nobody thinks about that.
Right.
Okay, because that's the other side.
Yes, absolutely.
You're facing one direction, that's the backside. Same thing with the Myrtle and West you were talking about, and I know that's the one that runs out on the highway for the traffic collisions and things like that. So as you're anticipating the layouts and what's going on, how much is driven by finance and how much is driven by non-financial issues?
Well, I think when you're looking at basically the functionality of the fire station, that's got to be driven primarily by the non-finance, basically the need of the community, the need of the area that's going to serve. But the finance plays a huge part of it because a fire station is an expensive operation, not just the day-to-day, you know, operation of it, but the actual construction of a station with basically making sure that it can house the apparatus, house the fire crew with the appropriate facilities there. And not only that, but also the protections for the fire crew built in there, such as exhaust extraction, so they're not constantly bathing in diesel exhaust. You know, making sure that they
opening the doors doesn't do it.
Doesn't quite do it. You know, because that stuff. You know, I've gone on calls before, and when I was still driving the apparatus, we even with the exhaust extraction system on there, if you get a little bit of exhaust in that station, it's going to hang out there for for a little while. It's been hanging out there since I got back. And the other side of it is too is just making sure. You know, obviously we have to close the doors right away when we take off. Make sure that, you know, we have security of the station there too, because with paramedics and everything in the station, there's a lot of medications and things in the station that would be an ample target.
So that doesn't blow out necessarily as quickly as the truck. It doesn't draft off of the truck.
No, it doesn't. I used to before I left shift, I would come home every morning from work. My wife would be like, "You smell like diesel exhaust," and just because we used to sleep in the station with it. And the extraction systems we have are better now, but back in the days when I first started, they weren't as great, and we definitely were living in diesel exhaust.
So is that air quality, and you just run them through filters, or is it just dissipation, and you keep as many doors and windows open as you can?
A little bit of both. We actually have exhaust extraction systems actually hooked to the exhaust pipe when they're in the station. And as the fire engine starts up and rolls out, a fan kicks on and basically channels the diesel exhaust out. And as the fire engine pulls out, there's an automatic release that basically pops it off so we don't drag it down the road, obviously. And so a little bit of exhaust still gets into the station, but not nearly as much as it used to.
The design of a fire station. Does it have to be state approved? Does it have to be CDF approved? Does it need to be whatever the National Association approved, or is it just the local architects sitting down and you got the architect, you got the manager, if it's a city.
Right.
You've got the fire chief, and you just kind of pencil in with whatever inputs you might have received personally and design a new fire station.
Basically, we would have to go through the same process as somebody building a new building within the city or within the county jurisdiction, because obviously we cover both. Basically go through the building department. Basically, we would probably have to farm out the plan check for the fire code, obviously, cause for the conflict of interest side of things. But we would sit down with an architect and basically go through what we need from the fire station and go through the design that way, and then go through the normal process with basically the review from the building department and everybody, and pull the appropriate permits. And then at that point, we'd have to put out the bid for the contractor that was going to build it and go through that process as well.
You mean you couldn't use off-duty firemen to do the contracting?
I'm sure someone would like the bid on it.
I bet you're right. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to L.A. will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like L.A. is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill Reynolds. So how's your replacement coming?
We're getting there. We'll be having the oral panel for the candidate on June 15th. And hopefully shortly thereafter, should they be successful, they'll move on to an interview with our board of directors and then hopefully look towards appointment sometime in early July.
So internal, then external, and then celebration?
Yes, hopefully.
If it's smooth.
Keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, yeah. How much needs to be changed?
There's a lot good in our department right now. I'd say, you know, we've really made some significant progress over the last few months. And it's the biggest thing, I think, is keeping that momentum going. And one of my goals as the interim fire chief has been trying to set the table for my replacement to be able to not have to concentrate on things that need to be fixed, but things where we can move forward. And we've got a great...
So new territory.
Absolutely.
Instead of plowing over the same old...
Absolutely. Area. And we've got a great group of people in our department that want to be progressive, and they recognize as one of the bigger departments in the area, we are our leaders, and we want to make sure that we're still pushing in the appropriate direction. And I think we've done a good job of that, and I think the person coming into that role will be happy with what they're inheriting.
Now, there was some discussion over the last little bit about there's still pressures to go back to what was Eureka Fire versus the county, you know, Fire District 1, da, da, da. Has there been enough water under the bridge now that it's a single unit?
Yeah, with our personnel and with our administration, the people that work here now, people have stopped looking at city versus district. I think they now view as Humboldt Bay Fire. And I think one of the biggest things is you know, with each new person that we hire that comes from outside the department, those memories fade a little bit further away because all they've ever known is Humboldt Bay Fire.
And, right, yeah, the reference set is today.
Yeah, absolutely. And but you know, but for the most part, I think that, you know, I'm sure there's some people that can look to the old days and say, maybe I felt better when I was working for the city or the fire district. But by and large, everybody that I speak with seems pretty darn happy with where we're at and recognize we're providing a lot better service these days with what we're doing now. And
so without a dramatic change of approach, what's this individual looking like in 5 years? What's different? Other than I know there's some of the station deferred maintenances that are,
right.
are biggies.
You know, there's a lot of things on the horizon. You know, right now we run part-time paramedics. When there's a paramedic on duty, we have paramedic advanced life support services. When there's not a paramedic on duty, we take that gear off the rigs and we just run with basic life support. Looking towards things like, you know, maybe going full-time with our advanced life support program, being able to have paramedics on the engine all the time.
Is that a training issue or a funding issue?
A little bit of both. Obviously, training to become a paramedic is pretty extensive, and it requires a year of classroom and field time and everything to get to the point where they can act as a paramedic. And there's the ongoing training side of it. And then all that training comes at a cost. So that's an issue. Talk about other areas where you want to see the department in 5 years. I would like to see us, you know, within 5 years, be able to get a fire engine back full-time at Station 4. So that way we can get away from the two-person rescue squad and get to a fully functional fire engine that can do a lot more good.
Do you see that being possible with the current structure that's there?
I think we can do it. I think that obviously it's going to require, you know, cooperation between both our parent agencies, the fire district and the city, to be able to get back to that point. And obviously there's a lot of things looming on the horizon that could take away from that, like, you know, the successor to Measure Q and with how successful they are in finding a new text measure in that respect.
Well, as they say, time will tell.
It will.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess we'll probably be talking interim next month, and then you may be bringing somebody along with you next in August.
I think that would be a fantastic idea.
We'll find out. See everybody tomorrow and on Monday.